hour two of Canuck Central. Satyar Shah with Randeep Janda. Canuck Central, people's show. Jeez.
There you go. There you go.
It took me a few days to make a mistake.
It's a collaboration, but it's still a people's show.
We've been talking so much Canucks today. Maybe that's what it is.
I didn't even notice. I'm not going to lie.
Josh didn't even notice.
I did notice.
You did notice.
I was about to correct you.
drop that in. It is the people show. Get in touch with us on our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. If you missed the first hour, we spoke about some depth defensemen the Canucks might be looking at potentially to round out their roster. And when we talk about depth, we're talking about cheap players, guys making less than $2 million, guys that can fit in under the salary cap where the Canucks are kind of positioned, and a guy that's not going to be making a lot of money. We kind of talked about that. We'll delve into that a bit more with Irfan Ghaffar, who's going to join us at 1:30. But also a bit earlier, we spoke to Corey Lavallette about the Carolina Hurricanes, who just lost Max Pacioretty, and how their offseason is going and whatever else is going on with their club. We talked about that as well. But now, in this hour, we'll talk to Irf coming up in a bit. But on the topic of those defensemen, because we discussed guys like P.K. Subban, who remain on the free agent market, Calvin DeHaan, Ryan Murray, Nathan Beaulieu. I mean, these are the players that are available on the market. We're not talking about great players. Jack Johnson. I mean, these are guys that ain't making a lot. Even if the Canucks add one of those players, it doesn't really change how we stack the Canucks defense versus other defenses around the league, around the Pacific Division. And given that the Anaheim Ducks signed John Klingberg, and unless a big trade happens somewhere in the division, I'd say at this point, what you see is what you're going to get on the back ends for all these teams.
That seems fair. And I think there's a few teams in the Pacific Division that could still make those small tweaks like the Canucks. So, you know, it's not going to be game-changing ones where, you know, there might be, there's rumblings. Oh, there could be trades. There could be additions.
Yeah.
I'll believe it when I see it.
Yes.
But in terms of the Pacific Division, it seems like it's set in stone the way that defense is going to sit and the way they're going to look. And, you know, it's really interesting from a Canucks perspective because I'll be honest, Sat, last 2 years I have not been a fan of, even the preseason, before the game started, I wasn't a fan of the Canucks even last year when it came to the defense and the year before that.
Yeah.
So there's been a lot of, like, I guess, pessimism when it came to the defense.
Mm-hmm.
This year, I'm not as pessimistic. And okay. I know not much has changed.
Uh-huh.
But the reason I say that is, I don't know if it's changed anywhere else in the division either.
Okay.
You know, when we're ranking this, and come in with your rankings, 650, 650, out of the 8 teams in the division, what spot are the Canucks at for you?
So it's really interesting you frame it the way you just framed it. It's not so much the Canucks getting better defensively. It's more about the level of the competition they're facing elsewhere defensively.
I think that's fluctuating a bit.
Yeah, and you know what? And this is something that we discussed on Canucks Central, you know, a few weeks back now. We were ranking the Canucks forward group and defensive group relative to the Western Conference. And the point that I made back then was, and this is before Anaheim made the Klingberg acquisition, and we'll talk more about how that all ranks out here in a second, but it was kind of about like, yeah, Vancouver's defense isn't good. Let's not pretend that it's good. But when you start looking at the other defenses in the Western Conference specifically, it's not hard for you to find 5 or 6 teams, maybe even, that you think their defenses are worse than Vancouver's, right? And that's saying not so much about Vancouver's defense being good. It's more about a lot of other defenses are really bad too. And when you start doing that exercise, it is pretty illuminating when you look at other rosters, how in the Western Conference and now in the Pacific Division, it's not exactly a powerhouse division or a conference for defensive corps.
No, it isn't. I think if you look at the high end, and there's, I would say probably about 3 or 4 tiers in this Pacific division when it comes to defense,
yeah,
right? Probably 4. And we can all agree, Calgary, Vegas, top tier.
Yeah.
Like, it feels like Calgary, I believe they're number one, based on the fact that the sheer depth that they have can't be really rivaled in the division.
Okay, so before we rank them,
yeah,
and we're going to get Josh to rank him as well, we've all ranked the top 8 teams. I think it's always really instructive to break things down into tiers.
Yep.
Because that gives you a true indication of what we're talking about in terms of level of, discrepancy between how good these teams are. So it's clear that Calgary and Vegas should be in one tier alone here, right? Do we all agree on this? Like on this, in the Pacific Division, Calgary and Vegas are in the same tier and no other team has a blue line that gets close to that.
I would agree with that.
Yep. Yep, yep, yep.
And yeah. You know what the difference here is that, and depending on how you rank them, I got Calgary 1 based on the fact that they have depth. They've got, you know, multiple guys. could you say, hey, there's a number one defenseman that is among the best in the league? No, but the sheer number of, you know, quality players they have on the back end,
yeah,
they've got them. They've got a good four or five of them, right?
Yeah.
Now, Vegas, you could argue, has the two best defensemen in the division with Pietrangelo and Shea Theodore. So I think it's fair to say those two above everybody else.
Yeah, I think that's fair. You can make that argument. I'd say still Quinn's the best defenseman in the division. But to your point, you can make an argument that it is Shea Theodore and Alex Pietrangelo. You could make that argument if you really wanted to. So okay, let's start with the top two. Randeep, who you got?
I got Calgary at number one based on that depth. You know, whatever you think. Noah Hanifin had a great year. Chris Tanev, when he's healthy, we've seen his value. Go through the list of guys. Rasmus Anderson.
Yeah.
You know, there's some real quality players throughout that lineup. I love the depth there. So I'm going to go Calgary number one. For me, Vegas is number two. They do have two real quality defensemen. I'm not in love with Alec Martinez and his game as he gets older. Braden McNabb, we know he's a hard hitter, but there's certain limitations to his game. But they still got two of the best in the division in Theodore and Pietrangelo. So for me, I got Calgary 1, Vegas 2.
Man, so I have a really hard time trying to separate. Like, I started this exercise going, yeah, Calgary, obviously. Then I'm like, huh, is it really? Like, because I don't love this guy. I don't love that guy. That guy's all right. But I look at the totality still, to your point here. I mean, when your top six consists of Noah Hanifin, Rasmus Anderson, Chris Tanev, Mackenzie Weegar, Oliver Shillington.
I completely forgot about Weegar and
Weegar
as well.
Weegar,
yeah, exactly.
And then you have guys like Nikita Zadorov as your sixth defenseman, and a guy like Yusuf Välimäki, who has some talent, who's coming off a couple of injuries. He's your seventh defenseman and gives you some cover, and maybe we'll see what he does. So I'd lean Calgary 1. I'd say you know what? It's a cop-out, but I'd say Calgary 1A and then Vegas 1B.
I would have Vegas number 1.
Okay.
And that's just because of the top two guys, like we've mentioned, Pietrangelo and Theodore. And I think the rest of their depth, I know like Martinez missed a lot of time last year. I don't mind McNabb. I think Whitecloud is a really good depth defenseman. And so I just like the upside a little more, especially offensively in Vegas with Theodore and Pietrangelo.
I should mention, that we're talking about 1 year. So we're not talking about futures. We're talking about this 2022-2023 season.
We're talking about teams as they're built heading into this season in the Pacific Division. There are 8 teams, and we're not talking about prospects. We're not talking about cap space. We're not talking about potential. We're just talking about strictly these are the NHL defensemen each team has, and we're ranking each defensive core. That's it in the Pacific Division.
And that's why when I go back to that, I look at Calgary and say, which of these two teams can be, no team is actually ready for this, but which team can deal with injuries on the back end?
Mm-hmm.
You look at Calgary, they've got high quality players, but if Mackenzie Weegar went down with injury, they've got guys that can play back there. They've got Chris Tanev, who stayed healthy predominantly the entire regular season last year. They've got other guys that can step up. They've got depth, and that's why I look at not only the individual players. Josh, you're right. Theodore, Pietrangelo, game changers. But if one of those guys go down, there's a significant drop-off.
Yeah.
I think Calgary is just more prepared on the back end anyways, not the forward group, on the back end. If they do have one of those, they're in a better position than they were last year. Remember Chris Tanev gets injured in the playoffs? They didn't have an answer. Now you have Mackenzie Weegar.
Yeah,
he can play that.
He can play that role for you at least. I mean, because a guy like Shillington, he ain't going to help you defensively in that sense.
Nope.
Zadorov, in those moments, he's going to be in trouble. I mean, they're real defensive defensemen that can help them in a big way. It was Rasmus Anderson that can do that, and it was also Chris Tanev. Now you have a third guy, Mackenzie Weegar. It gives them a bit more balance on that back end as well. So those are the top two teams in the Pacific Division, and we'd say we agree, the three of us, that they're in a tier of their own. You can also get in touch with us, Dunbar Lumber, 650-650, ranked Pacific Division D-Cords. You can tell us who you have first, second, and third, or whatever it is. Get your opinions in. So let's move down to who we have at number three. I'll start this one, and I'll say I have the LA Kings coming in at number three to Blue Line Cores. And it's funny because if we go back a couple of years ago when we talked about Drew Doughty, we would all say overpaid, struggling, and man, this contract's not aging well. This past year, before he got hurt, Drew Doughty had one of the best seasons he's had in a long time. He was an absolute stud both ways. The question for me for Drew Doughty isn't does he have the talent, it's can he replicate that type of a year next season? If he does, that's a team, especially with the young defensemen they have, that has an arrow pointing towards two guys take a step, we might be able to knock on the door in that top tier. They have the potential with some of their guys. But that's the question I have. Do you get the same type of year from Drew Doughty? But you look through that defense, they're a team that the collective did really well. So I'd say number three, I have the LA Kings defensive core.
Okay, this is really interesting because last year I was talking about Drew Doughty and like he was an early Norris discussion and maybe not the leader, but he was at least on the periphery of, hey, this guy should get consideration if he continues to play like this. And I was kind of beating that drum. So I'm a Drew Doughty guy in this city. That usually means anger, people directed towards you. I have no problem with that. I think he's a damn good defenseman. But he's dealing with a pretty big injury this year.
Yeah.
Right? Knocked him out of play for the rest of the year. Mm-hmm. And I do wonder, at his age, can he replicate that year? So that's why I don't want to actually have LA at number three. The collective was strong in the playoffs. The collective did their best to contain the Drysdales and McDavids of the world. But the problem is, I don't know if they can, for this one season, do that in the regular season. You understand what
they
I'm saying?
Replicate their year.
Yeah,
again,
exactly.
Yeah.
And hey, I like some of the pieces. I actually, and I can't believe I'm going to say this, and this goes to speak to how much I think this division after the first year drops off. I'm actually putting Edmonton at number three.
Oilers.
I'm not even a fan of their defense, but it tells me, like, if I'm comparing the Kings and a Drew Doughty that may be 100% of what he normally is, he could be 80%. We don't know this. Like, that's a huge question. I look at a defense with Darnell Nurse, who had a rough playoffs.
Playing hurt, really.
Playing hurt, and you know, he's not that bad of a player as we saw in the
playoffs. He's not, but he is probably overpaid.
100%.
Yeah.
But remember, when we're thinking about this division,
there's
not many great defenses out there. So I would put Edmonton, Darnell Nurse. I would look at, you know, I think Evan Bouchard will be a good defenseman. There are some issues with his game. He is not as, you know, polished as some Edmonton Oilers fans one would be right now. But remember, playing with Duncan Keith had its benefits, but it also had its negatives as well. Foot speed is not a forte of both of those
guys. Yeah, neither guy, really.
So that defensive unit had some issues, but at the same time, you still have, you know, some depth defensemen that are going to be able to play roles. I look at, like, you know, Tyson Barrie, he's going to be able to pick up points. He's not going to necessarily give you defense, but I look at Nurse, Tyson Barrie, Evan Bouchard, offensively inclined players that have a little bit of defense in Darnell Nurse. That's number three for me. I still got them a little bit above LA. It's close for me. But I still have questions of what kind of Drew Doughty comes back. Because if Drew Doughty is near the player he was last year, this is easy slam dunk number three. I still think it's a question, man. At that age, after a major injury, are we certain that Drew Doughty is going to come back playing that same style?
It's a fair question. I have a lot of questions about the Edmonton Oilers as well.
But so do I, man.
I'll get to those coming up in a second, but let's go to Josh. Who do you have at number three?
I have the Kings at number three as well. Mainly, like, I just trust them more as a unit defensively than I do the Oilers.
I think that's fair to say, just because of how they play together as a unit. And I have Edmonton coming in at number four. Let's move to number four here on the list, because the reason I have questions here is Barrie and Bouchard are very similar. Good offensively, question marks defensively. Barrie's a good skater, but he's not good in transition defense, and Bouchard struggles in transition defense. I do like the addition or the re-signing after acquiring Brett Kulak, because I think he's an underrated good two-way defender who can help them out a little bit. It comes down to Nurse. Can he take another step? And Cody Ceci, does he replicate the season? Defensively, I see a lot of guys that can get worked on that blue line. That's my biggest question. And that's why I'm a little not as high on them. And man, like, I'm going based on their offense being good and going based on that team playing well and maybe being the best team in the division this year because of how much firepower they have. But individually, I don't love that defense. But I have them still at number four, given the how they've played and the value each player has brought. But man, do I have questions about that defense.
So a team that needs, you know, we were talking about depth signings of one of those veterans, especially on the right-hand side. I think the Edmonton Oilers are one of those teams that, if they can make it work, and apparently they're bettors favorites to get a PK Subban on their roster. He's not exactly a defensively inclined defenseman, but I do think they need some help there. Because individually, yes, anytime you have Cody Ceci on your roster, and even if he had a decent year, you still worry about him. Kulak was a decent one. You know, you can talk about Darnell Nurse having a better season than he had last year. But yeah, there's some serious question marks. I have LA in that spot at number four. And the reason I have that is the Drew Doughty aspect. If he is near what he was last year at the beginning of it, this team should probably be the third best defensive unit. But their defense, especially in the playoffs, you know, it's easy to fit that identity in the playoffs because you're saying, all right, get us 4 wins, right? And I just wonder over an 82-game schedule, how will they be able to, I guess, match up? Alex Edler, 1 year older, still a good player, but Sean Durzi was thrown into the deep end.
He did all right. He did well. You know, defensively struggled a little bit, but offensively was good.
He's not going to play those types of minutes. He's probably on that second pair for this team. You know, Drew Doughty's going to be back. You got Matt Roy as well. So you're not necessarily dealing with as many injuries last year. But I do wonder, like, there's any assumption that he's ready. Now, it doesn't happen that quickly sometimes. Sometimes you take a bit of a step. There's sometimes you're based off adrenaline. You're going, hitting the league. And then, as a lot of defensemen in the NHL, teams understand how to play you a little better after that first look. So I do have some questions on the middle of that roster, whether it's, you know, Mikey Anderson was money in the playoffs. But is he a surefire thing? Is Sean Durzi a surefire thing? I sometimes think we anoint defensemen that show well in the playoffs and say, oh, this guy's ready.
Yeah, they had good. I mean, to be fair to LA, they had a good regular season as a defense. I mean, all those guys played well, but I do agree. Are they going to be able to replicate it? So Josh, at number four. So we both, all of us have Edmonton, LA in some order, 3 and 4. Do you have Edmonton at 4?
Yes.
All right. So we have Edmonton at 4. Now we get to the bottom half of the Pacific
Division.
Nobody's
mentioned the Vancouver Canucks yet.
No, so far. So far we have Vegas, Calgary 1-2 in any order. Then we have Edmonton, LA in whatever order between the three of us. Coming in at number 5, I would have had Vancouver here. But now, Josh, like you, I have the Anaheim Ducks because they signed John Klingberg ahead of Vancouver.
Yeah. And I think we both had the same idea where they're pretty comparable, but then you add Klingberg, and I think that just gives a little bit of an edge to the Ducks.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm different in this regard. You got the Ducks. I actually got Vancouver at number 5. And the reason I say that is you started off the segment talking about how Quinn Hughes, for many, is the best defenseman in the division.
Yeah.
Or at the very least, top 2, right?
Yeah.
I think that factor creeps the Canucks ahead of the Ducks for me. But also, the reason I would have them at 5 ahead of the Ducks is I think we have not seen the best of OEL. And I've mentioned this a few times. OEL's pairing with Tyler Myers, it doesn't set up well for OEL. The way that he plays well, and let's take power play one out of this, because we know unless Quinn Hughes is injured or not playing, OEL's not going to get power play one. But 5-on-5, if you have a different partner, if you have a different pairing,
but who is that different partner? Well, it doesn't exist on this roster.
My point is, though, you know, with Tyler Myers, and this is something that we're going to have to watch for the rest of the year, I just feel as though this year was a lot of learning for OEL to say,
yeah,
how do I fit in this roster?
I do agree with that.
I think he comes back better this year. So that's why I'm giving the Canucks a little bit more respect on this, because I think OEL will be better this year. He wasn't terrible last year by any stretch of the imagination, but I think he'll be better this year.
I do agree that he's going to be better based on just me watching him play and seeing the value in him and everything, but there's also a chance because of his age that he doesn't get better, that he actually does take a step back next year too, and maybe he peaked last year. I mean there's so many question marks, and that's why I'm a little bit hesitant on it, you know.
And the whole right side is a question mark,
and it's a huge question mark. Now I will say this, because we're going to get to the end of this pretty quick here, and the big takeaway is going to be, as much as we're ranking Vancouver, say, you know, I have Anaheim at 5, Josh has Anaheim at 5, Randy has the Canucks at 5, I have the Canucks at 6, Josh
Canucks at 6.
And you at 6 have Anaheim.
I have Anaheim. So it's, once again, it's pretty close. But, you know, the fact is, that's kind of what we're talking about. The tiers. The tiers of Edmonton, LA, Vancouver, Anaheim. They're all in one group.
It's all in the same tier. And I see people saying, you know, Edmonton over Vancouver, you guys lost all credibility right there. This one, are we pretending that Hughes is injured all season for these rankings? And somebody else says Canucks have to be number 7. They're overpaid garbage after Hughes. So, I mean, you're going to get a bit of everything. But the reality is, my biggest takeaway, they're all in the same tier. LA, Vancouver, Edmonton, Anaheim, all 4 of those teams, they're in the same tier. Because they're not same as Vegas. They're not the same as Calgary. And they sure as heck ain't as bad as the Seattle Kraken. They're not as bad as the San Jose Sharks. They're definitely better than those teams. Those 4 teams, however, are all in the same tier. I don't care. You want to put Vancouver 3rd? You can. You can make that argument. Go ahead. I don't care how you rank these 4 teams. They're in the same tier. And they all have massive flaws. And they all have tangible good players that can make a difference for them. But to your point, how we started this entire conversation, and Josh, I want to get your thoughts on this. It's not even so much about Vancouver having a really bad defense. Defensive cores in the Western Conference are pretty trash.
Yeah.
There's like maybe four or five good defensive cores, and that's it.
Well, those four teams that we talked about being in the same tier, right? Edmonton, LA, Vancouver, Anaheim. If that number one defenseman, let's just say on each team, goes down with injury, how many teams can deal with it to a certain degree? I don't think Vancouver can. Like, there's been moments where OEL stepped up in power play one, but even for a couple of games, we're not talking about a long stretch, every single one of those teams would be hurting. I think the only team outside of that tier as well, that Calgary might have some success, the drop-off would be minimal. And if you're looking for Vegas, you're saying, okay, Petrangelo goes down, you still have Shea Theodore, or vice versa. Very few teams can deal with a substantial injury, and that second tier especially, they have, all it takes is going to be one injury, and I'm not even talking about number one defenseman, maybe your second pair D. None of those teams really have that depth to deal with any injury, let alone their top defenseman going down, especially in that second tier.
The other thing I would say about that tier is it's very easy to see how a team like the Canucks at the end of the season, we could look back and be like, they're obviously the third best defensive team in the division.
Two things have to happen for that. One, Quinn Hughes has to be Quinn Hughes and be healthy, and I think that gives you a shot just in and of itself, him doing his thing. OEL giving you a better season. If OEL can actually be worth the money, because this year he had... You can look at some of the analytics or whatever, but essentially he was the equivalent of a $5 million defenseman.
Yeah.
That's what he played at, that level he played at. Can he play at the level of a $7 million defenseman, $6.5 million defenseman? If he does that, and then you get just a decent play from everybody else, you can be the third best defense in this group. It's not a high bar, though.
Yeah.
But you need those three things to happen, and you need some health. And the hardest thing to project is health for this blue line.
A part of that is also, do you have just a better read on that pairing if it's OEL and Myers playing together? Does OEL feature a little bit better? Because it felt like one guy was going to be the renegade, right? Tyler Myers has that kind of that hero element to his game. And OEL, throughout his career, liked to produce offense. He liked to be a little bit more offensively inclined. In that pairing, you can't necessarily do that.
You have to let Myers be the guy that roams, and he has to stay back a bit more. But as the season went on, you saw a better kind of balance from that. One thing they're going to try is to see if OEL can play the right side, and maybe him and Hughes can be a super pair. And if those guys can play, say, 22 minutes at even strength every game, well, I mean, then all of a sudden you have less pressure in your second and third pair. And the Canucks' big issue here, to me, is they don't have another top four defenseman, like a legitimately good top four defenseman outside of Hughes and OEL.
Yeah.
Because I like Myers more than people like Myers, but he's a number 4-5. That's what he is. You know, like he's a guy who can play number 4 minutes for you and hold his own, but really number 5 on a good team type of deal, right? Like, you know, and he's getting paid more than he is. But they're really missing two guys in between. That's what they're really missing. They're really missing like a bona fide number 2, and they're really missing another guy who's a credible number 4. Because you can get away with having one number 1 defenseman and like, you know, 2 threes and a 4. You can do that. It's hard for you to have like a number 4 or 5 or number 1 and then number 3. Like, you need to have one or two more guys that can really play minutes for you.
And as you know, the team has talked about, the only way you're going to make that happen, restructure the defense, is via trade. So don't expect that anytime soon, but you never know. Just to clean it up as well, the final two teams we never mentioned, Seattle, meh. Like, honestly, they're the definition of meh when it comes to defense. And San Jose, straight trash right now.
Yeah,
so that's why we didn't mention them, because it's pretty straightforward.
Exactly. So we have Seattle, all of us have Seattle at number 7 defensive cores, and then we have the San Jose Sharks at number 8 on our rankings. So that's where it is. You have three, you have honestly, I'd even say that, if I had to break down the tiers, I'd say the top tier is Vegas, Calgary. Then it's LA, Edmonton, Vancouver, Anaheim in the same tier. Then it's Seattle in its own tier, and then San Jose in its own garbage tier. That's kind of how I would tier the Pacific Division.
Just laying in its own filth.
It's layers of, you know, like they're like a 7-layer dip. It's like, no, 7 layers of garbage. Dip.
Oh, yeah.
That's kind of, you know, what it is. It's not a good.
I feel like San Jose is going to be that for a while.
Probably for a while. All right. We'll continue the conversation on the other side. Irfan Ghaffar will join us, and we'll give you an update on the World Juniors right here on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Back in on the People Show.
There we go.
People show.
There we go.
I also made a mistake. See, and this is, I made another mistake because I'm not used to being on this time slot in the People show. And
what mistake was that? I completely missed it again.
A trivia thing.
That's not a mistake.
No,
it happens all the time.
We don't usually do it.
No. We like it floating anyways.
Okay. All right. Okay, you know, then we're floating it into this segment here at 1:33 p.m. on Wednesday. And we have overrated, underrated also coming up at 2. So submissions, get those in for to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. And for Don't At Me fans, yes, that still goes on at 3:20. But on turf trivia, for your chance to get a spot in the People Show Fantasy Football League, let's play turf trivia, Randeep.
Shouts to Colby. I believe it was Colby or Colton. I have to double check my list here. But Abbotsford won yesterday. I got to confirm that name. Colton and Abby, there we are. That won entry yesterday, so the current Turf Trivia champion is Abbotsford. You said it, two leagues, 24 teams. We're playing against Bick, myself, Citizens of the People Show, more invitees as well. So how do you get your way into this league? I've had people texting me as well. You got to win your way in through Turf Trivia right now. Today's question, 650, 650, hit us up, a little bit more difficult.
Okay.
We were talking about PK Subban a little bit earlier on. He was taken with the 43rd pick of the 2007 NHL draft.
Mm-hmm.
The Canucks made two picks before Subban was taken by the Habs in that draft.
Oh, yeah.
Who did they select?
Oh, I know the players.
Pre-pick 43. Save the answer for a little bit later on, Sat.
I know.
But who were those two players that the Canucks took before Subban was taken 43rd overall?
Well, at least one of the players the Canucks picked turned out to help them in one way. I won't say what, but at least one player helped them. The other one definitely didn't. So we'll leave it at that. Get your submissions in, 650, 650 to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, and we'll announce the Turf Trivia winner at the end of the segment. But it is now time to welcome in our good friend from the fourth period, Irfan Ghaffar, into the conversation. Irf, what's happening, man? How you doing?
Good, guys. I know the answer to that, too, and I very much so agree with you.
Yeah. It's one of those.
One player helped a little bit, and the other one, maybe not so much.
Not so much. Yeah, I mean, and it's not like people have been longing for a PK Subban and Milan Lucic in this market or anything over those guys, right?
No, not at all. Also, okay, I'm watching the Medvedev Kyrgios match.
Okay.
This got me to think. Is there another athlete that is so good at his sport, in like sport in general, but just looks like he doesn't care when he's playing? Like, James Harden, a little bit, reminds me of that. Some people would say hockey's like Phil Kessel, where he just didn't really care, but he was so good.
Yeah.
I think about it in other sports.
I feel like
Kyrgios just doesn't care. It looks like he just does not care at all, but he's so good.
Like, yeah, he's got an impressive serve. He's like a pretty good volleyer, too. His returns are unbelievable. But, yeah, I'm trying to think. Like, usually you'd think basketball, right? Like, super chill, somebody that's kind of like, man. Would have been
it's
like Mark.
It's probably James Harden in basketball.
Like if we're going, if we're going through history, would it be like Stephon Marbury back in the day?
Yeah.
Like he was so good, but he didn't really care.
Yeah, I mean, okay. Would we say that in hockey? Does Quinn Hughes not look like that a little bit with how nonchalant he seems? Right, like how like he seems non-pulsed.
So effortless. Yeah.
But Kyrgios looks like he has disdain for the sport. Like he looks like he doesn't even enjoy the sport.
Yeah, that's different.
No, he's just so good at it, and this is how he makes his money. And other than that, that's it.
Man, he didn't have a coach for like years. He finally has a coach. He's actually taking it seriously, kind of.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be a very tough task to coach a guy that seems uncoachable.
Yeah,
but he's great for the sport. People love to watch him.
Well, I mean, you mentioned tennis and Kyrgios. I mean, we'd be remiss not to ask you, especially with the news yesterday with Serena Williams announcing she will be retiring at the end of this tennis season, most likely after the U.S. Open. What do you make of her career and the announcement that came down yesterday?
I mean, how can you say anything but that?
Yeah,
23 majors changed the game for tennis, not just women's tennis, but tennis in general. Like absolutely unbelievable. What is it, like $93 million in career just playing tennis? It's crazy. And not only her, like, I mean, her sister too, right? They both had the success that they did and definitely changed the scale, the way that the sport is viewed globally for sure.
Now, Irf, we'll get into some other stuff here. I know we have some fantasy football stuff to talk about. We have overrated, overrated, underrated topics we'll throw by you, because we have that segment coming up at 2. But when it comes to the Vancouver Canucks, we had a conversation yesterday. And, you know, when it comes to them still looking to do stuff, we know the big things, they're not getting done. But could the Canucks get some minor stuff done between now and training camp too?
Yeah, I think that they want to. I mean, it's no secret that they want to improve their defense. I think that you know, they've had some talks with Calvin DeHonkamp. I'm not sure where that went. I think the DeHonkamp was looking for more than a one-year deal. I don't think the Canucks were looking to do that. It'd probably be on some low money, not the $4.5 million he was making. I'd say anywhere between the $1 to less than $2 million range for a guy like him. But I think one of the two will circle back at some point. So that's an interesting one to keep an eye on. Also, Tucker Poolman. And the only reason why I think that they're going to look at a guy like DeHaan is, yes, they want depth on the blue line and things like that. But I don't really know that they know what Tucker Poolman's status is going to be, you know, heading into training camp. So, yes, improve the defense, but you also have to have a lot more depth if this guy can't play either. So it's another wait-and-see process, but I know that they're definitely looking to try and add a defenseman.
Okay, that's interesting because, you know, anything we've heard from representatives of the team, they've talked about, hey, yeah, he's looking good, or we've heard, you know, positive things. But, yeah, until he actually hits the ice, until he actually plays games or practices with other players, you never really know with a head injury. In regards to those defensemen that you mentioned, and Calvin DeHaan being one of them, but even across the board, what's the sense of interest around the league? Because we hear links, you know, PK Subban, maybe going to the Oilers, the better favorites and all that. Is there interest across the league for guys, whether it's DeHaan, whether it's Strahlman, or a PK Subban?
Well, I think for those, if you look at those guys, those are depth guys. Those are, you know, 4, 5, 6 guys. Maybe not even 4. Maybe like just 5, 6 guys, right? Guys you round out your lineup with, you know, guys you hope that you can get on, you know, low money deals, right? And they're guys that, you know, PK Subban, if Edmonton's the betting favorites because they just lost, you know, Duncan Keith, and they want another veteran in that room and things like that. But that's a gamble, right? It's a pretty big gamble there. And, you know, a guy like Strahlman as well, you know, he's got a long pedigree, but, you know, is he a guy that you want on your team? It depends on what direction, you know, you're going to take your team. Mm-hmm. And then obviously with Calvin DeHaan, I feel like for the Canucks, you know, he's 31, well, 32 years old, right? A decent season, but, you know, he's a guy that, you know, can play both sides, right and left. So if you can, you know, somehow manage to get him, like I just mentioned, on a low risk, low money move, then, you know, why not be able to do it? But if you're him, you're probably not signing here for a one-year deal. Right.
Well, it all comes down to the market for those guys. I mean, yeah. As we get closer to the camp and they realize, okay, I mean, all we have is one-year deals, maybe that's when you sign those guys. And I think, to your point, I think it illuminates two things, them looking to make these types of moves. One, it is potentially the Tucker Poolman situation not being completely, you know, figured out with his head injury and all that sort of stuff. And the other one kind of being what they talked about. They need more depth. They want more depth. And they would have to, if they want to make big changes on the back end, it would have to come via trade. And the reality is, it's really hard for them to make those types of trades right now. So the only way they can add to their blue line at the moment seems to be making those, you know, free agent additions on the cheap, because I don't think they're any closer to making any trades on the back end.
No, not right now, especially, right? I mean, I think everyone's pretty much in vacay mode for most of the NHL and their front offices and things like that. But look, if something comes up and they're working and they figure out a way that they, you know, want to improve their team, I think it's going to happen. But you're going to probably see some movement, you know, probably around Labor Day, a little bit after that, when guys start to show off and things of that nature. But, you know, it's not going to shock me if all these guys end up showing up back to training camp. Remember when we talked about this, Pat? I think before the draft, the biggest surprise or the biggest shock would be if nothing happened. And right now, so far, nothing's really happened yet.
It's true, man. It's true. And we were talking about the defense a little bit earlier on as well of, you know, if you look at the Pacific Division, Calgary is stacked right now. They've got a very impressive defensive unit. You got Vegas, who have got some high-end guys, especially with Petrangelo and Shea Theodore. But after that, it feels like there's a bit of a mishmash there. You can kind of rank them any which way you want. When you look at the Canucks defense, and hey, there's critics. I've been a critic of it as well, especially on the right-hand side. But when you look in the division, where do they rank? Because it feels like they're, at worst, it feels like they're sixth. And, you know, it's been something that we've talked about a lot in this city. But, you know, the difference between the Oilers versus the Canucks is not that big, if any.
No, I mean, the only good thing for the Canucks right now is they don't have stupid contracts like those teams do.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they don't have the contract. I mean, you can argue the Tyler Myers one, yes, and the OEL. But, like, they're not paying Erik Karlsson $11 million. Mm-hmm. They're not paying Darnell Nurse $9.25. Yeah, they're paying OEL a lot of money, but look, I think that if OEL has a better season than last year he wasn't even that bad, I think you can say, okay, whatever, we'll see what happens here. But the only one that you're going to get anything for right now as a defenseman is probably Tyler Myers, right? And he's a guy that, you know, they have his trade list and things like that. And, you know, if they want to try and facilitate a move, you know, it's going to happen. It's gonna, like you mentioned, Sat, it's going to happen via trade to improve that defense, because it's just, there's not enough money to go around to sign these guys who are going to want $3 or $4 million for 1 or 2 years, right? If you get a guy at $1 million or $1.25, you go ahead and make that move. But the guys that are going to want $2 or $3 million for a 1 year deal, I just don't think that's going to work here.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you there. I mean, they're only looking to add guys on the cheap unless they make a type of trade that might bring somebody in on term, but they have to move money out to do that, which all means complicated. It's going to take time. Don't expect anything like that to happen. I think what we're all expecting on Earth, and something that I chatted with you about, and something that I've been kind of following when I came back to work after a couple of weeks off, was what's going on with Bo Horvat. And all I keep hearing on the Bo Horvat front, Earth, is that it's positive on both ends. Don't really have much to report as far as numbers and then being closer or whatever, but the expectation is it is going to get done before the season begins. But what is your sense on Bo, and do you think they are close at all on term or money?
Well, I think that, you know, you're both a cornerstone of this franchise. Like, pictures all over Rogers Arena. It's all over the city, for that matter. Like, there's no doubt in my mind that contract gets done, and I think that both sides know it's going to get done. It's going to be one of those things where it's like, couple days before training camp, maybe just before the Jake Milford golf tournament, Bo gets signed. Or remember when he got remember he signed his deal just before prospects camp?
Yep.
And then he went up to Penticton and did his tour. It's gonna be one of those things, probably. You know, where they get it done, they get the captain done, they do the media tour, and then that's it, right? The JT one's obviously the interesting one, because that's the one that we've been talking about for basically a year now, right? To see where that situation's going to go, and you know, it's right now gone nowhere. So it's just everyone's in vacation mode a little bit and wait and see. And that's just kind of the way it is right now. These are definitely the dog days of summer. And that's why it's kind of fun to talk about it, but there's really nothing happening.
On the Bo contract, you know, I think everybody tends to agree that it's going to get done. But when we start talking about term, that's where people kind of start to raise their eyebrows. There's a lot of folks that say, hey, if he's coming back, you give him the full term, you give him the full 8 years. Others are saying you got to go 6. I don't know if the player and the agent would want 6, but when we think about term, what's the sweet spot for Bo Horvat? Not based on reports, but what would we be comfortable with in terms of term with Bo?
I mean, I don't know, we just cover the team. I think yeah. That if you're a fan, you might want, you know, 6 years, but if you're both camp, you probably want the term. You probably want 8. I think if you're the Vancouver Canucks, you're probably somewhere in that range. I think at the end of the day, like, you kind of have to take that, yeah, he's the captain of this team and things like that. And, you know, Bo's Bo. You know, he's a 20-goal guy, you know, and he's a guy that, you know, power play and PK, he does everything for that team in all reality. But it's the term and it's the dollar value, right? If you go longer term, you probably get him on a cheaper dollar value. You go shorter term, you're going to have to pay him a little bit of money. Right. So it's not going to be one of those Huberto crazy type of contracts where it's all signing bonus, where it's virtually impossible to buy it out. I just don't think that's going to happen. That's not their style. So you're going to look at it and you're probably going to go, he's probably going to get 7. He's going to get molded more than Brock Besser, I think, on a longer term. But I think that he deserves it. Right. I think that when you look at it, and everything that he's done for this organization, he's probably a guy that does deserve it. But crazier things have happened, and that's why they have these negotiations, right? And, you know, you're not negotiating with people that don't know how to anymore. It's guys like, you know, Patrick Alvin and Jim Rutherford and guys that have done these deals for superstar players or star players or captains of their team. So we'll see what happens. But I like, if I'm a Canucks fan, I'm not worried about, you know, both contracts or what it's going to be. I don't think it's going to be one that handcuffs you for a number of years at all.
Well, in the other big one that's unresolved is a JT Miller one, but let me guess, not much going on there.
No, absolutely not.
All quiet.
I know. It's all quiet.
Yeah, that's the sense I got. It's like, the sense I got is don't expect anything in August. We'll see around training camp if there's any movement on extension or anything else, but a holding pattern very much with all these Canucks things. But, you know, that pretty much covers all the Canucks stuff, right, Irv? I mean, there isn't much else to really dig into at this point with this team. But this time of year, We're also getting set to do our fantasy football drafts. And right now we're doing turf trivia, and we have people texting in an answer to be involved in a People's Show Fantasy Football League. And you, Irv, have your fantasy football drafts coming up very soon as well. And as a staunch long-term Seattle Seahawks fan, are you chomping at the bit to draft or buy Russell Wilson so we can have success with the new Broncos team?
We were having such a good talk for about 13 and a half minutes. And you had to bring up that name.
My bad.
I really did. that one cuts different. It really does.
I mean, it does. But hey, but I mean, like, it cuts different, but it's not the big story.
Well, yeah. I mean, the big story is, he's on a way better football team. Probably going to surprise me if they win that division. I mean, any team in that division can win the division. Look, he's got ridiculous weapons that he can use. He's finally got an offensive line that'll protect him. Like, there's a reason why a lot of the money in Vegas is on him to be the NFL MVP this year. And it's also the biggest liability risk for him to be MVP because if he gets hurt. But, like, I think most of the money right now is on Russell Wilson to be the MVP next season just because of what he has surrounding him, both on offense and defense. And, you know, rightfully so. I'm just sour. Okay. That you want to know.
Okay, let's lighten the mood a little bit here. Drew Locke or Geno Smith? Who do you got in the quarterback battle for the ages?
That's not really lightening the mood. But I think in Geno we trust. I trust Geno Smith more than Drew Locke. The fact that there's a quarterback battle in Seattle featuring those two names is still crazy, but hey, man, it's the Seahawks. Week one, Russell Wilson in Seattle.
Oh, man.
I think so. He gets showed on the Jumbotron. He gets his cool ovation, and then he just gets mercilessly booed, which is what it should be.
Well, I mean, we saw a taste of it. I mean, they were booing him when he just made an appearance on a video at the Seattle Storm game where they put a tribute for Sue Bird. I mean, that should be a happy-go-lucky moment, and people are booing Russell Wilson, so that just kind of tells you what's going to happen. So what do you think is going to happen with the Seahawks this year, though? Like, how bad a year are you expecting? Like, over, under, how many wins?
3.5.
Wow.
Maybe 5. Okay, let's go 5. Under 5. I think they win under 5 games. If they win the first one and go over, I really don't care.
Ooh, overrated, underrated, Pete Carroll.
Overrated play calling.
Okay.
Overrated play calling. Like, dude, you have so many weapons. Why are you running the ball every 5 seconds?
Well, they're not going to run the ball less this year.
You stumped them there, though.
Literally, yeah, exactly. They're going to run the ball more this year.
Irv was literally, like, you stumped him there for about 2 seconds, Irv. You had to really think about that one. That was a good one.
Dude. Like, Pete the first one's great.
Yeah, no question. Irv, always a pleasure getting you on the show, man. Go and do whatever else you're doing today.
All right, gentlemen. Be well. We'll talk soon.
You got it. We'll chat soon. That is Irfan Ghaffar, the fourth period. Always fun catching up with him. And as we kind of mentioned in the first segment of the show, the Canucks is still kicking around some of the free agents, the bargain bin, to see if they can get some depth on the blue line. And the player that Irv has heard that they're connected to, or at least spoke to specifically, is Calvin DeHaan. And we kind of mentioned they're looking at guys that can probably play the right side. We mentioned his name as a group of about 3 or 4 guys that are available that can do that and that have some experience. So it's not a surprise that that he's the guy, but it does kind of show you that Vancouver's still looking to add a little bit on that back end, especially from a depth position, to see if they can shore things up a little bit.
And one difference between some of the guys that we were talking about a little bit earlier on, and DeHaan was a part of that group, but with DeHaan, he is 31 years old. You know, PK Subban, 33. Strahlman, 36, turning 37, which is, you know, he's an older guy. So if you're looking at trying to get somebody who's still a little bit younger, maybe has a little bit more to give, DeHaan would be the option. But to your point, left shot D, he can play both sides, but he is a left shot, which, based on the philosophy, we'll see what these, you know, coaches want. Do they want, you know, those guys that are natural to the right side? Are they okay to have some flexibility there?
I think they're okay to try it based on everything that I've heard. And we mentioned, you know, they'll try to see with Oliver Ekman-Larsson coming up in training camp. Can he play the right side? Travis Dermott is a guy who's a lefty but played the right side at times, and they weren't afraid of trying it out there. I think because of the position the Canucks find themselves in, where their right-hand shots, they're not great options outside of a couple of guys, that they're going to have to try that. So I think they're going to try it. It comes down to how well can those guys acquit themselves in that position if they get that chance.
Yeah, and you don't have many options. Is the reality.
You
know, and that's really what it comes down to.
Yeah, you got to do what you got to do. All right, when it comes to you taking matters into your own hands, we gave you a chance to qualify and get in and have a spot on the People's Show Fantasy Football League with turf trivia. And we posed a question, which was, Randeep?
The question was, and it was PK Subban related because yes. we were talking a little bit earlier about him as well. Question was, Subban was taken with the 43rd pick of the 07 NHL draft. The Canucks made not one, but two picks before Subban was selected by the Habs that year. Who did they select?
Ooh.
Is that, you can do the honors here because you remember this.
Well, they picked Patrick White in the first round.
Number 25.
From number 25. And like I mentioned before, Patrick White, the Canucks got something for him. He was a key part in acquiring Christian Ehrhoff. And no, it wasn't because Patrick White was actually a good player, but the reason why he was an asset was because he was a first-round pick
yep.
who struggled so much, and he was so bad, Randeep, that the Canucks hadn't signed him yet after college, and they weren't going to sign him, which meant he was going to become a free agent. But here's the rub. If you don't sign your first-round pick, you get a second-round pick as compensation. So the Canucks traded Patrick White to the San Jose Sharks for Christian Ehrhoff. There was other parts too, Daniel Rahimi, minor parts.
Yep.
Canucks also took Brad Lukowicz's salary back in return to facilitate that trade. He was making something like $2 million in real money, but the cap hit was $1 million, so they buried him and took the money. It was essentially buying Christian Ehrhoff. But that was Patrick White. At least he turned out to be a second-round pick asset. The guy picked 33rd overall. Well, Taylor Ellington, and God bless him and God love him, not his fault, amounted to nothing.
Nope. Not zero.
Sounds like it might be his fault.
Hey, shouts to him. He was playing in Denmark up until about 2014. So he did make a career out of it. He was in the ECHL. But in terms of NHL games, zero.
Zero.
And Patrick White, zero.
Yes.
So those are two top 33 picks that the Canucks took before when PK Subban, and they amounted to zero NHL games. And Ellington was also traded. He was traded to Columbus in the deal for Sammy Paulson.
Oh, that's right.
Didn't have the same cachet as the Christian Ehrhoff one.
No, I think it was just like getting rid of an organizational contract.
Pretty much. Pretty much. And he was traded alongside a fourth-round pick that turned into Josh Anderson. So Columbus, I think, won that deal.
I think they did.
Even though Ellington didn't amount to much, they ended up getting Josh Anderson that deal. Congratulations to Vicky and Poco. We had a lot of correct answers. Put him in the randomizer as we were talking to Irf. And Vicky is back in the People's Show Fantasy Football League. She didn't win last year. That was Darren. But she is one of the few. Maybe we'll have more returnees, but she is definitely a returnee from last year. So congratulations to Vicky.
You want perseverance and always trying and never giving up? It is Vicky when it comes to these contests. My goodness. Involved in every single one of them, always on top of things.
If she was a draft pick in the NHL, she would have played more than zero games. I can guarantee you.
Yeah, she'd hustle her way.
She'd hustle her way to at least one game.
She'd find a way to get in. All right. Great stuff as always. Congratulations to Vicky and Poco, who is now a part of the People's Show Fantasy Football League. All right, much more coming up in the second hour of the show. Kevin Woodley is going to drop by, but next it is time for Overrated, Underrated. Get your submissions in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox 650-650 right here on Sportsnet 650.